Coming up, the Roman Catholic Church is poised to canonize Mother Teresa, a saint, for reasons we all know. Deborah Potter reports on the Mother Teresa maybe you didn't know. Also, a Lucky Severson story about Noah's Ark, featuring not just the Ark, but Noah too. The Ark is in northeastern Kentucky, and its creator claims it's a replica of the original Ark.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Tim O'Brien, sitting in for Bob Abernathy. Good to have you with us. Muslims are demanding that presidential candidate Donald Trump apologize for remarks he made about the parents of a Muslim soldier killed in Iraq. The soldier's father, Kaiser Khan, addressed the Democratic National Convention last month and criticized the Republican candidate's proposal to ban Muslim immigration. In response, Trump suggested that Khan's wife, who had stood silently by her husband at the convention, had not been allowed to speak. Khan's wife later explained she had chosen not to speak because she feared becoming emotional about her dead son. Muslims accused Trump of promoting inaccurate stereotypes about the role of women within Islam. A wide range of religious groups, including Black Protestants, Latino evangelicals, and Reformed Jews, have launched a massive voter drive dubbed Together We Vote. Organizers say they plan to talk to 1 million voters and focus on issues such as police brutality, immigration, and wages.
Together with our allies, we seek to work together to unify faith voice, to be able to speak for this country in a way that builds us into a place where all can not just barely survive, but everyone can thrive.
The 2016 Summer Olympics are getting underway in Rio de Janeiro. Kim Lawton reports on some of the many ways religion is playing a role.
With a diverse array of athletes and spectators descending on Rio, some observers say this could be the largest interfaith gathering on Earth. And in developing the infrastructure of the Games, Olympic organizers took religion into account. Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, and Hindu representatives met several times to plan how the spiritual needs of the athletes would be met. They consulted on the creation of an interreligious center inside the Olympic Village, where athletes are able to pray and hold worship services, as well as receive spiritual counseling. There are 24 officially designated chaplains from the world's 5 major religions. A special committee also worked on making religious accommodations for athletes, such as helping Muslim women negotiate uniforms consistent with their faith traditions. Fencer Ibtihaj Muhammad is the first hijab-wearing athlete competing for the U.S. Outside the Olympic Village, many faith-based groups are on site to evangelize or to raise issues of concern. Some religious charities are criticizing Rio for clearing out poor people from the city in what they said was an attempt to hide the poverty that exists in many areas. Other humanitarian groups praised the Olympic Committee for raising awareness about the global refugee crisis by allowing displaced people to compete together under a single flag. The team includes refugees from Syria and Africa. Meanwhile, Pope Francis has also gotten into the Olympic spirit. He released a new video urging prayers that the practice of sports, quote, may contribute to peace in the world. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
In other news, Pope Francis has created a commission to study whether women can serve as deacons in the Catholic Church, a role now reserved to men. The pontiff first hinted that he would create such a commission in May when he met with a group of nuns. The new commission is composed of 6 women and 7 men from academic institutions around the world. It includes one American, Phyllis Zagano, a professor at Hofstra University. Currently, men who serve as deacons can preach and preside at weddings, baptisms, and funerals, but only priests can celebrate Mass. Pope Francis also reflected on last week's trip to Poland for World Youth Day, where he joined hundreds of thousands of young people. Francis said that despite cultural differences, the youths were able to create a mosaic of brotherhood. The pontiff also spoke about his visit to the former death camp, Auschwitz, and said he had, quote, felt the presence of all the souls that have passed there. He compared the cruelty of the Holocaust to the pain and hatred experienced in today's world. Aboard the papal plane on his way back from Poland, the pontiff made some remarks about Islam. Francis said he does not believe Islam is inherently violent, but that every religion has its little group of fundamentalists. Early next month, Pope Francis will be canonizing Agnes Gunja Boyajou as a saint, better known as Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa died almost 20 years ago. Her legacy of devotion to the poor continues to grow. But during her lifetime, she had struggles and even some doubts about her own faith that few knew about. We have a report from Deborah Potter.
Everybody's okay?
6 days a week, people gather outside a nondescript building in downtown Miami. The meal they're waiting for may be their only food of the day.
How are you?
Good.
This soup kitchen runs on donations alone. No government money is accepted, and no funds are ever solicited.
Thank you.
Those are the rules of the Missionaries of Charity, the order founded by Mother Teresa.
She said that she preferred the insecurity of divine providence, which was not just some slogan, it was her true life's ethic that God would provide.
The sisters here take the same vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience as other Catholic women religious, but they add one more.
Missionaries of Charity has the fourth vow, that is wholehearted free service to the poorest of the poor.
Sister Mangala met Mother Teresa in 1959 when she joined the order.
She is a person fall in love with Jesus. From the moment I met her, I could feel that one. And that is why she could grab whole world, you know, because of her love for Jesus, love for God.
Agnesa Gonja Boyaji was born in 1910 into a devout Albanian family. At the age of 18, she joined the Sisters of Loreto in Ireland, who sent her to teach in India. In 1946, she heard what she later described as a call within a call, the voice of Jesus telling her to come, be my light to the poor. In 1950, in the desperate slums of Calcutta, Mother Teresa founded her own order, the Missionaries of Charity. The sisters, dressed in iconic blue-trimmed saris, tended to the sick and dying, seeing Jesus in each of them, because of his words in the New Testament, as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. Mother Teresa called the poor the hope of salvation for mankind, because we are going to be judged on what we have done for them. The world noticed. In 1979, Mother Teresa received the Nobel Peace Prize.
I want you to love the poor. And never turn your back to the poor. For in turning your back to the poor, you are turning it to Christ. For he had made himself the hungry one, the naked one, the homeless one, so that you and I have an opportunity to love him.
Her ministry was not without controversy. Critics denounced her celebrity, accused her of misusing donations, and called her medical care primitive. Some charged that her real motive was conversions.
When she was accused by some Hindus of trying to convert people to Christianity, she would say, I convert no one, God converts people, and my job is to love them.
Jim Tuohy first met Mother Teresa in 1985. He spent 2 years as a full-time volunteer and became her attorney and personal friend.
When she talked to you, it was like you were the only person in the world.
Tuohy is now president of Ave Maria University in Florida, home to a Mother Teresa museum, and a program that sends students overseas to work with the Missionaries of Charity.
The sisters weren't there trying to restructure society. Their mission was to satiate the thirst of Christ present there in that dying person. From the words, I thirst, that inspired all of Mother Teresa's ministry, those words from the cross.
It was only after her death in 1997 that the world learned of Mother Teresa's own deep suffering. Letters to her spiritual directors that she had wanted destroyed revealed that for most of her last 50 years, her prayer life was dry. The place of God in my soul is blank, she wrote.
I was shocked. Of all people, you would say, well, Mother Teresa obviously has a very
intimate relationship with God in her prayer, and we found out it was just the opposite.
As a Jesuit novice, Reverend James Martin worked with the Missionaries of Charity in Kingston, Jamaica.
She, in a sense, felt that distance from God, and the poor sometimes feel a distance from the rest of society. And Jesus felt abandoned. You know, he says, my God, why have you abandoned me? On the cross. And so that's how she eventually understands it, in a sense, a kind of invitation to a closer relationship with the Jesus who felt abandoned.
Less than 2 years after her death, Pope John Paul II put Mother Teresa on the official path to sainthood in the Roman Catholic Church. But many of those who knew her believe she was a saint already during her lifetime.
As a human being, you know, it was very clear. Otherwise, a person, one single woman, cannot do what she did to the world, to the church.
Mother Teresa herself came to Miami in 1979 to establish this house with four sisters. Today, around the world, there are about 6,000 sisters of the Missionaries of Charity and 600 houses like this. Is she still in your heart?
Oh, yes, she is all the time.
Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love.
Where there is despair,
today, Missionaries of Charity sisters recite the same St. Francis prayer Mother Teresa said every morning.
Christ.
They rise each day at 4:40 a.m., just as she did, and they work until bedtime, sharing the same joy she embodied.
Inner joy will remain always, and we are comforting one Jesus, one more Jesus. No. Once you know Jesus is suffering in them, it is easy.
Kathleen Leger has volunteered at the soup kitchen for 13 years, drawn by the spirit of Mother Teresa.
Mother, I want to be like you. I want to love the poor like you. This is before I had any calling. And you know what? I believe she answered my prayer.
She was a living saint because of the work she did. She never did anything for her glory. She did it for God.
If I ever become a saint, I will surely be one of darkness, Mother Teresa wrote in 1959. I will continually be absent from heaven to light the light of those in darkness on earth.
Other saints have done what she did, right? Found religious orders, worked with the poor, lived lives of holiness, but none of them, as far as I know, had to do it with an empty tank, basically, with nothing going on in their interior life. So it really makes her an extraordinary saint. This most traditional of women, right, in the habit and traditional beliefs, is a very modern saint. She's a saint for doubters and seekers and people who wonder where God is in their lives, which I don't think anyone would have realized during her lifetime.
Mother was asked one time what the worst disease was she'd ever seen. Was it leprosy or was it AIDS? And she said, no, it was loneliness. That gnawing sense of being unloved and unwanted, unwelcome. And I think Mother Teresa is going to have more of an influence in the 21st century and beyond than she had during her lifetime, because that disease isn't going away. And she has a lot to teach us about what the remedy is, which is to love and to be loved.
These are good people. They love people. They love, you know, they love other people other than themselves.
And is God in this place?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. That's what the people teach you, that's what they represent here.
Mother Teresa was sometimes asked what she would do when there were no more poor people in the world. Then she would say with a smile, "We will be unemployed." For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Deborah Potter in Miami.
A Palestinian manager of the international Christian aid organization World Vision has been charged with funneling $43 million in charity funds to Hamas over the last 6 years. Israeli officials arrested the World Vision employee in June. World Vision says it has no reason to believe the allegations are true, and the organization has also said it was extremely concerned about its employees' safety. According to World Vision, it helped more than 4 million children around the world last year, including 40,000 Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. According to the United Nations, about 60,000 people have fled South Sudan since fighting began last month. In all, almost 900,000 have left the country since civil war broke out in December 2013. Recent clashes have repeatedly threatened a tentative peace deal reached a year ago. Cholera is a growing threat for those who remain in the country, food distribution for the tens of thousands of people stranded in UN-run displacement camps is also increasingly a challenge, and sexual violence is also on the rise. An archaeological team excavating a 5th century synagogue near the Sea of Galilee has uncovered mosaics that appear to portray monumental events of antiquity. Said to be of extremely high artistic quality, this one shows a fish swallowing one of the Pharaoh's soldiers during the parting of the Red Sea. Another, said to be of Noah's Ark, shows pairs of animals, here donkeys, as described in the book of Genesis. Archaeologists said it was unusual to find such displays in an ancient synagogue, notwithstanding references to such events in the Hebrew Bible. The mosaic of Noah's Ark may be of particular interest to Kenneth Ham, who has made it his life's work not just to recreate the Ark, but Noah too. The story of Noah's Ark has always raised some questions. Mr. Ham's efforts to recreate the Ark has raised some new ones that even Noah could not have contemplated. Our reporter is Lucky Severson.
This is a robotic version of Noah aboard his Ark.
God said He was going to wipe out all flesh that lived on land. If he was speaking only of a local flood, it seems like God would have told me to move instead of spending decades building this ark.
Unlike Noah's ark, which according to biblical accounts may have taken as long as 75 years to build, this one in northeastern Kentucky only took Ken Ham, the CEO of the Ark Encounter, a couple of years.
This is the most authentic recreation of Noah's Ark in the world based upon the dimensions given in the Bible. So that translates to 510 feet long, which is 1.5 times the length of a football field.
Ham says it's the largest timber structure in the world.
From ground level to roof is 7 stories, and from ground level to the top of the bow is 10 stories.
It's huge, and since the opening of this for-profit park in early July, over 35,000 people have taken a tour. It's not cheap.
Actually, we're already seeing people from all over the world. I've met people from China, from Uruguay, from Honduras, Mexico, Spain, Australia.
This is a Chamber of Commerce dream, yes.
This is Jamie Baker, the happy executive director of the Grand County Chamber of Commerce. Grand County is the proud home of the Ark Encounter.
Oh my goodness. Literally since the Ark has opened, the phones have rang off the hook. I took a call today from Louisiana, took a call earlier from Alabama, and they want to bring a 50-person bus tour in.
Brandon Hudson comes from Indiana. He loves the Ark because it supports his belief and that of Ken Ham that the Bible should be interpreted literally and that the earth is only 6,000 years old and that man and dinosaurs lived together at the same time.
And then from the science side, it's been an encouragement to reinforce why we believe what we believe in the biblical worldview that we have.
It's not a book to be read literally, but it's a book to be read and taken seriously and internalized.
Joe Phelps pastors a congregation of about 1,400 at the Highland Baptist Church in Louisville.
The story of Genesis, at least the way the Ark Park tells it, is we're better than everyone else. We got saved by God. Everyone else is excluded. And oh, by the way, unless you follow this particular trail, then God doesn't love you very much. And what happened in the early days might happen to you too.
The Ark has 3 levels. The bottom holds the cages of animals representing only a small number of the different species Noah may have loaded aboard his Ark.
The animals that they made look like real animals. I kind of mistook them.
They do, don't they?
The middle level includes the living quarters for 600-year-old Noah, his wife, 3 sons, and their wives.
I look about the same age as any other 600-year-old person I've met. Well, except for my wife. She doesn't look a day past 400.
According to the Bible, Noah and family spent about a year on the ark until a worldwide flood receded. Every other thing perished because, according to the book of Genesis, man had turned against God. Ken Ham feels that's what's happening in the world today, hence the Ark Encounter.
We see increasingly the secularization of our culture. And the church is not really impacting the culture as it once did. So what can we do to make an impact in the world? Well, why not build a Christian-themed attraction that the world's going to take notice of? for the purpose of getting people talking about the Bible.
In the beginning, the state of Kentucky offered Ark Encounter a huge tax break, over $18 million, and then canceled the offer after learning that the enterprise would hire only Christians who signed a statement of faith. So Ark owners sued the state, claiming that their right to free speech had been violated. The judge agreed, and the sales tax rebate was reinstated, which did not sit well with a number of religious leaders in Kentucky. Pastor Chris Caldwell, for instance, he's a pastor of the Broadway Baptist Congregation in Louisville.
They're very clear that the purpose of the Ark Park is to contribute to their ministry of evangelizing people, converting them to their form of religion and their very narrow understanding of Scripture. And they very much see it as a vehicle to execute that mission. And I don't think tax dollars should directly or indirectly support a mission like that.
It's enormously troubling that they have received state funding, but now are going to have a statement of faith that their employees are required to sign in order to work there.
If you want a job here, you have to sign a statement of faith that says, among other things, that the world was created in six consecutive 24-hour periods.
The requirement is that these employees not only be part of the Christian faith, but a particular subset of the Christian faith, which is those who believe the Bible is literally true and that the intent of the story of Genesis about Noah and the Ark was to record a historical event.
The law, which the judge has already ruled on, the law is that if you are overtly a religious organization, then you have every right to have religious preference in hiring.
The Ark has already provided 300 jobs in a community that really needs them. And Ken Ham has projected ultimately as many as 20,000. Jamie Baker wants those jobs.
We have over 80 churches in Grant County. We don't all agree the same way.
Wouldn't a lot of the members of those churches not be qualified on the statement of faith?
Could be.
Do you have any more questions?
Is this the end of time, the last days?
We're in the last days, but we've been in the last days for 2,000 years. So ever since God's Son stepped into history to be Jesus Christ, the God-man, we've been in the last days. As I tell people, we're more last than we were, we just don't know how last we are.
Ham has projected as many as 2 million visitors a year. Even if that's high, there are plenty of people who will make this a pilgrimage, like Brandon Hudson.
What a testimony of God's grace. I'm blown away. Encouraged, highly encouraged.
We have to come back.
We will be. We'll be bringing our church with us next time.
Okay.
Actually, Ken Ham may be hoping that the last days are a ways away. The Ark Encounter cost $100 million to build, and he needs to pay back his investors. It could take a while. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Williamstown, Kentucky.
On our calendar, Tisha B'Av, the annual day of fasting, commemorating the tragedies that have fallen on Jews around the world, including the destruction of the First and Second Temples. Finally, the writer Frederick Buechner celebrated his 90th birthday last month. Buechner is an ordained Presbyterian minister who has never pastored a church and rarely even attends one. But his books and his message on Facebook and on Twitter have had vast influence. Our interview with Buechner was conducted in 2006.
Listen to your life. Pay attention. Pay attention to what happens to you.
And then what comes from that?
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe nothing much. But maybe the secret of all secrets you need to hear may come through some event, something that happens or fails to happen. You encounter the holy in various forms, which, unless you have your eyes open, you might not even notice.
I asked Buechner what advice he gives young people seeking a career.
The vocation for you is the one in which your deep gladness and the world's deep need meet. It's something that not only makes you happy, but that the world needs to have done.
And his own career?
I've tried to be as honest as I can to my own experience, what it's like to be alive on this planet. But with a particular eye cocked to, a particular ear cocked to the elusive, ambiguous presence of God.
That's our program for now. I'm Tim O'Brien. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, Watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There is also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org/religionethics. As we leave you, scenes from this week's funeral of Jacques Hamel, the French priest killed by Islamic militants. Nous te louons, ô Christ notre frère, assemblée des saints, peuple de Dieu. Chante, te chantons, tabernacle de l'Alliance nouvelle. Next time, in many parts of the world, there is ongoing violence between Sunni and Shia Muslims. But here in the United States, the two branches of Islam live together in relative harmony. Why?
It's a tiny community. Tiny communities don't find it useful to kill each other because they're already so tiny in number.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.